Well, I love Christmas. I have no mixed feelings about it at all. I enjoy Christmas music when it starts playing on November the 1st in the shops. I love a good carol and wish I could sing the descants. I think turkey is overrated, admittedly, but so it turns out to loads of people. And so I love bonding with them about the fact that we don't really like turkey and other Christmas traditions, which are a bit weird, but which we'll always hold on to because they're so Christmassy. I love Christmas. But that is not the same thing as loving Christ. That might sound like a really obvious thing to say, but there are plenty of people in the world who love Christmas and wouldn't call themselves a Christian in any way. And I think that is quite important because I think we can tend to split people into the wrong categories. So people who love Christmas and people who don't. When I think really the categories ought to be people who love Christ and people who don't. So that means that you could hate all of the Christmas baggage that it comes with and the way our culture kind of shoves it down your throat, because that's not really what Christmas was about anyway. And on the kind of flip side, and maybe hitting home for me more personally, you can love all of the Christmas baggage, but that doesn't really mean that you love the Christ. And obviously, I would still say that I believe the gospel. I still know that the reason we're celebrating Christmas is because it was the birth of Jesus. So all of that is still true. But what is the thing that gives me joy at Christmas time? Is it Jesus? Or is it the festivities, the family time, the time off work? And all of those things are good things, and they're things that I can bond with my non-Christian family and friends over. All of us together can love Christmas without having to love Christ. And there are some awful Christmas Christian cliches. You've probably heard them. Christmas begins with Christ, or Jesus is the reason for the season. That one's on a little tacky decoration in my parents' living room right this moment. And they are actually true. So I do agree with those things. But they don't really get me on board with the truth. They don't help me. The overused Christmas catchphrase doesn't help me to love the Christmas baby. And I suppose I just want us to think for a moment about that now together. These are just some of my Christmas reflections this year. I hope it will be helpful. And there's a little handout, hopefully you were given on the way in, which will help you to follow along. However you feel about Christmas, how do you feel about Christ? Is where we're going tonight. And in a crowd like this, I wonder if there might be quite a lot of us who just feel a little bit indifferent about the Christian Christmas. Maybe a bit tired of faking excitement at the idea of God with us. If you've been to any of our carol services, you will know that indifference isn't really the traditional response to Christmas. We've sung, "Joy to the world, the Lord has come. Joyful, all ye nations rise." We had our Christmas seminar on joy this year. I wonder if you have managed to locate your joy. And tonight, we will still have to sing, I think, "Rejoice, rejoice, Emmanuel," which, as that reading from Matthew tells us, means God with us. How do you feel about God with us? Does it bring you joy? Or is it an idea you've heard before and has just grown a bit stale and old and samey? Well, tonight I want us to investigate just one particular joy-stifling belief. It's obviously a false belief, it's wrong, but I think it means that we view God with us as no big deal. And we're going to look at the Christmas reading that nobody ever reads, because it's a bit weird. So we read Isaiah 9 quite a lot at carol services, where everything indisputably gets more wonderful and joyful. But we never read Isaiah 7, which I've printed just a couple of verses on your sheets. And here things are just a bit more ambiguous, and I'd even argue suggestive of a kind of more troublesome idea of God with us. I've put those verses on the handout. Let me read them for us. Isaiah 7, verse 10. Again, the Lord spoke to Ahaz, "Ask a sign of the Lord your God. Let it be deep as Sheol or high as heaven." But Ahaz said, "I will not ask, and I will not put the Lord to the test." And Isaiah said, "Hear then, O house of David, is it too little for you to weary men, that you weary my God also? Therefore the Lord himself will give you a sign. Behold, the virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and shall call his name Emmanuel. He shall eat curds and honey when he knows how to refuse the evil and choose the good. For before the boy knows how to refuse the evil and choose the good, the land whose two kings you dread will be deserted. And the Lord will bring upon you and upon your people and upon your father's house such days as have not come since the day that Ephraim departed from Judah, the king of Assyria." Maybe you can tell just from reading it there, it's not the most obvious Christmas reading. And Kev actually let me choose the readings for the carol services this year, and you'll have noticed I haven't chosen it so far. I'm not really suggesting that it would make a good carol service reading. It probably needs too much explanation to go with it. But Matthew does quote it in the nativity story, doesn't he? So that what the Lord spoke through the prophet might be fulfilled. "Behold, the virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and they shall call his name Emmanuel," which means God with us. And as with lots of prophecies, it has kind of short-term fulfillment and long-term fulfillment. So in the first instance, it really was about a baby born in the days of King Ahaz called Emmanuel. And Matthew says it's also about Jesus, who would be called Emmanuel. And I want to suggest that God with us in both of those instances might have a slightly different meaning. And indifference would be totally the wrong response either way, because it's definitely not no big deal. So we're going to start with Ahaz in Isaiah's day. And this, if you're following on the sheet, is God with us. Bad news of great terror for all the people. And Ahaz actually makes an appearance. We've heard about him already this Christmas, did you realize? In Jesus's family tree. Although I wouldn't hold it against you if you'd forgotten some of those names from the genealogy at the start of Matthew's gospel. He was the king of Judah over 700 years before Jesus was born. And at a time when Jerusalem was being attacked by two kings, Israel and Syria. And King Ahaz gets a really bad write-up in the Bible history books. He is not a good king. And here you just see that he refuses to ask God for a sign when he's told to. You might think that his response is kind of godly, "I shall not do that." But he just doesn't want to put his trust in God's words. He doesn't want to trust God for the future of his kingdom. And you can see it was the wrong thing to say, because Isaiah says in verse 13, "Hear then, O house of David, is it too little for you to weary men that you weary my God also? Therefore, the Lord himself will give you a sign." So little baby Emmanuel is born. He's cute, and he's the sign that God gives. But he is given in response to the king's unfaithful, untrusting disobedience. And God does actually save Judah from Israel and Syria, those two kings. That's what verse 16 says. But verse 17, it results in even worse things to come. Verse 17 again. "The Lord will bring upon you and upon your people and upon your father's house such days as have not come since the day that Ephraim departed from Judah, namely the king of Assyria." Another king. Bigger army, scarier, stronger. This is the sign of Emmanuel. God with us in judgment. Because the king and the people, as it turns out, they are just so unfaithful. They refuse to trust God's promises. And so God is with us to judge. Perhaps God with us is really just to make a world for God without us. Have you ever thought of that as a solution to the human sin problem? Just get rid of the humans and there'll be no sin problem. The verses that follow, the verses on the sheet, if you want to look them up later, on into chapter 7 and the beginning of chapter 8, they describe something a bit like that, where God uses an enemy army to carry out his judgment and wipe out the people. There's even some verses where I think the enemy army is the one saying, God with us. As in, God with them, God against us. And I don't know about you, that's just not really a concept I've ever thought about very much. I think quite well of myself. I presume that God is for me, God pleased with us. I never really think of God with us being a problem, which is, sadly, to miss basically one of the biggest lessons being taught throughout the entire Old Testament about human beings. We desperately need God with us, but how long could we ever hope to survive that? God with us, a holy, just, good God who judges evil with unholy, unjust, evil people. History teaches us that that is never going to go very well because we will always screw it up. God with us is what we need, but it's much more likely to spell judgment than it is salvation. And it's into that context that comes the Christmas twist. So Christmas is where God's answer to that problem is so much better than what we deserve. It's the turning point in the redemptive story. God with us, not in judgment, but in grace. God chose for God with us to be good news of great joy for all the people. Because in Matthew, as we heard earlier, the baby God with us also turns out to be called God saves. She will bear a son, and you shall call his name Jesus, for he will save the people from their sins. It's basically the same exercise we did if you came to the seminar on joy earlier this month. Counterintuitively, we need to reflect on our failure, on the sinfulness and helplessness and dire situation of the human race, or we will just never love Christmas in a distinctively Christian way. Admit that God with us first sounds like it should be judgment, and then you might actually rejoice when instead it means salvation. As ever, when we feel indifferent to Christmas and have no particular reaction to the idea of God with us, it's because we underestimate our own sin, we excuse ourselves from God's judgment, and we downplay then the most extraordinary U-turn in the salvation prospect of the human race that there ever was. And I guess without all of that, God with us, it could still be a point of interest, right? So it's still a kind of tourist attraction of the Bible. Quite interesting, the creator entering into creation, the Lord of Lords as a tiny baby. There's still loads that we could say about why that's bizarre and definitely worth a look. But what is it that will keep you looking without glazing over? What will stop you from ever looking away? What will help you to look with eyes not just of vague curiosity, but eyes of longing and adoration and worship and joy? Well, don't let familiarity with the gospel turn into presumption or entitlement. It will kill our worship. And it is the opposite, actually, of what all the carols every year try to remind us of. Not all of the carols, admittedly. So Deck the Halls, fa-la-la-la-la, will not leave you very edified. But sin is in quite a lot of them, if you have the ears to hear it. Let me read again the first verse of O Holy Night, which the guys just sang for us. And I'd love you to notice how honesty about the state of the world pre-Jesus, it really fuels the response in the song. O Holy Night, the stars are brightly shining. It is the night of our dear Saviour's birth. Long lay the world in sin and error pining till he appeared and the soul felt its worth. A thrill of hope, the weary world rejoices, for yonder breaks a new and glorious morn. Fall on your knees, O hear the angel voices, O night divine, the night when Christ was born. Carols, in general, are just not really afraid to talk about sin. It's actually quite a Christmassy topic in that sense. It's the reason the Saviour's birth is the thrill of hope. And if you're just not really feeling it, can I recommend maybe use some of the time between now and Christmas to acknowledge your sin, to admit that it does deserve judgment, and to rejoice that God with us is also known as God saves. The shops have us thinking about Christmas from probably about November the 1st. Our Advent calendars help us to count down the days in December. But I wonder how much time do we really spend preparing for Jesus? How much time do we spend preparing for Christmas in that way? Well, in many ways, I think that the Old Testament is supposed to be Christmas preparation. It gets you ready for Jesus. So it might be worth reading something like Isaiah, if you have the time. Hopefully some of you have been able to use Shah's Isaiah devotionals. But please don't think it's too late. I think often with this kind of thing, we all have good intentions, and we mean to start reading something in Advent, and you just never got round to it. Well, don't panic. There is still a week to go. And whether Christmas Day itself actually will be enjoyable for you or not, remember that it is the day that God with us decisively became God saves.